right, welcome back to So There I Was. I'm your host again, Travis Womack. And today's guest is none other than Lucas Vellmer, a former Army veteran. Actually, it's a former, it's just your Army veteran, engineer. I don't think it's like former Marine, all that stuff. But welcome to the show, Lucas. I'm glad we could make this work out after many other attempts.
Yeah, no, it's good to be here, finally getting on. So happy to be here, and we'll shoot the shit and tell stories about so no shit there I was.
Yeah, there you go. That's the meaning behind it all. I like to give every guest just kind of a quick little intro on themselves, kind of like, why did you join? When did you join? Kind of what sparked the desire to wear a uniform?
Yeah. Okay, so I joined the Army in 2000. Probably because I didn't have anything else going for me at the time. I mean, I had good education, I had decent grades, but there was no scholarships. I grew up in a small town. My graduating class was like 118, and that was the second largest in the school's history. So yeah, I mean, grew up poor, grew up in a small town, didn't have much going for me. So it was like, okay, well, what am I going to do with my life? Let me go ahead and join the Army. So that's what I did. Left in 2000 after I graduated high school. Did 10 years as an engineer, heavy equipment operator, turned project manager, turned glorified babysitter. Yeah, no, for sure. Three deployments to Iraq. Got tired of really doing a lot of stuff for ourselves and for the Army and not doing a whole lot for the people that we were supposed to be over there helping. So I started looking at a career change. So went and applied for civil affairs, got accepted,
Awesome.
Went to Fort Bragg, North Carolina, did all the training. Ended up being in the AFRICOM battalion and learning how to speak French. So, I definitely blended into all the countries in Africa.
No, that was, for those listening, he's very pale like me.
And then I had a really interesting career turn. So, luck and timing, knowing the right people at the right time. Ended up becoming the branch manager for 3 years up at Fort Knox, working at HRC. And then I got my choice of return assignment and decided to return to Fort Bragg, go work at the proponent, kind of doing some higher level stuff, still in the mix, but trying to put those skills and all that experience I had to good use. Retired in 2021, went right to work as a DA civilian in the proponent.
As I do.
Yes. And got some more good education and training while I was there. And then once I got done with that sort of gig, ended up having to move. So that's why I left the job. And I mistakenly thought that being a GS-12 meant I had a foot in the door to get a job around the DC area. That is not the case.
No, it's a starting point.
Yeah, for sure. So a lot of lessons learned there. I went back to school, finished my degree, and this Customs and Border Protection recruiter job kind of just fell in my lap out of nowhere. It wasn't on USA Jobs. It was a friend of a friend of a friend. Apply, direct hire situation because 30% or more disabled veteran. So I was able to get picked up on direct hire authority.
Skip some lines there, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And so I started working that job last October, and it's become the best job I never knew I could
wanted.
Have.
That's awesome. That's a great that's a great feeling to have whenever you're like, I didn't even think about this, and here you are. So that's awesome. Well, let's go back to the kind of the engineer stuff. So there's the put it together engineer, and there's the take it apart engineer. Which one were you?
Let's see. Well, I guess you
preferred.
would call it the take it apart for the first 5 years. So I was attached to a combat engineer battalion. So I was mostly surrounded by 12 Bravos. So, make things go boom. And then when I moved from Campbell to Fort Richardson, Alaska, it was completely different change of pace, different change of like just job and everything in general. So that was putting things together. A lot of road construction stuff, a lot of laying the foundation for the vertical engineers to actually be able to build up and, across from.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, I mean, it was a great job and I loved what I did, but I saw the future of job satisfaction and I was like, I don't think this is it. Even though I had a wildly successful career for my first 10 years.
And so it can be exhausting. I totally understand that. I spent 5 years in the infantry and I went to be a recruiter. And it's what's interesting, it was in my recruiter time, like how much the army changed. Like it was crazy from 08 to 12, like this massive shift. And it wasn't just so much the people or training, it was literally the equipment, you know, because I mean, I remember very well, like we used to keep ANCD, you know, the little black box radio fills, right? You know, they used to just be in
I
the
remember.
drawer of our desk. You're like, oh, here you go, go fill the radio. And no one cared. And then literally in that time, like, recruiters don't get any kind of tactical training. You know, you don't get it. You're not up to speed on the new lasers and thermals and all this stuff. And I crossed over and became an officer, but I showed up to a maintenance platoon, and which was a whole other story itself. But from airborne infantry to that, I was like, this is weird. And they had the I forgot what it is now, the little Palm Pilot thing for radio fields. And it was, you had to have a secret clearance to touch the darn thing. And it was kept in the arms room. I'm like, so you're telling me our primary way to talk is constrained by the three people that have a clearance to hold the darn thing. Like, let's recap here. We have 185 trucks that need a radio fill, and only three people are qualified and allowed to touch them. Great plan. I was going bonkers, you know, and like knowing how to use it, and because you couldn't touch the darn thing, and it just those little things that had changed. And that's just one example of, you know, so I totally understand, like, it's a change can be good. You know, like, I've got to get a different mindset.
No, for sure. You're absolutely right. And so that just reminded me, like, I was advanced when I was at Fort Campbell. So I learned all about the ANCD, how to put the fill in, how to take the fill out, how to do a whole bunch of stuff with the ASIPS radio. But then you fast forward to like 2006, maybe 2009. It's probably 2009. We've gone from the ASIPS radio to what was it,
The
the
Harris.
Thames, and then the Harris. Like I had the black radios first, and then I had the Harris radios, and those things were super complex. So it's like you're having to learn all this stuff on the fly because what you have back in the rear is not what you have
For
forward,
not even close,
right?
yeah.
So it's all like steep vertical learning curve, and they're like, "Oh, okay, you'll just learn all about this stuff during Riptoa." Really? Yeah,
My
because
three
that's
hours
exactly what
of
doesn't
drinking a
happen.
Rip It, literally, and getting towed out. That's why it's called Riptoa. So, yeah, I hit, we were on the surge, like we're an airborne infantry unit, and we just got done doing a whole bunch of air assault insurgents and stuff. It was great, and we got flipped around for the surge, and we hit the ground in North Baghdad, and there's like just this whole field of Humvees and other stuff, and we're like, the crap is that for? And they're like, this is for y'all. We're like, you do know we're going to break all of this. Like, that's all we are good at is breaking stuff. And you give us trucks, and we're going to break every single one of them. And they, you know, the Army had just finished its realignment in 2006, you know, so it's the back end of that. And we're like, who are these guys? Like, that's the BSB. We're like, the what? What are you talking about? You know, we never had any clue. And they're like, you think you do maintenance and you have to go to the motor pool. And we're like, we have parachutes. Like, what the crap are you talking about? And like, all of a sudden now here I am changing oil. And I mean, we were so mad. It was like this, the friction of like, y'all could have done this a little bit more of a phase in instead of like on the fly. And we had these, you know, the motor pool chief is like, come, hey, Sergeant Womack, your vehicle says it's due for an oil change. I'm like, y'all get to that probably never. Like I will break this truck and drive it off a bridge before we get time to do that. We're just not gonna do it, man. Like we're doing like 3 3-hour ops a day. Like I'm not wasting my downtime from watching all 10 seasons of Friends to come change the oil.
No, Yep, I get it. Yeah, like the fact that some of that stuff still continued on was kind of impressive and really annoying at the same time. Just doing AOAP samples in
Oh yeah.
2005, like
Gosh.
what a,
Yeah.
really?
We're mailing oil
Wow.
and vials. We still do this? We have
Yeah,
these things
exactly.
called computers. It's amazing technology.
Yeah.
So I gotta
Yeah.
ask you though about being in civil affairs, because I have to tell you a funny story real quick.
Yeah.
So in my whole career, I've had a civil affairs do anything with us one time ever. And it was like 2.5 hours. And we had a Humvee, we had a little Humvee trailer. And in the back of it was like, I don't know, a ton of bags of rice or these like saran wrapped, like trays of food things. It was, I don't know what
Sure.
it's nasty. But anyways, it was all there. And it was, we had this little, the cover on it and stuff. It was full of crap. And we're driving and like our job is to go kill bad guys, you know? And these two civil fair guys followed us along on there at a gunner, you know, in their truck, and they had this loudspeaker thing. And we didn't drive slow ever. Like, we're like, if you drive slow, you're an easy target. If you drive fast,
Yep.
you're a hard target. So we're like hauling butt down Route One, you
Yeah.
know, Route Tampa for those that remember the road name, you know, but we're zigzagging and bumping cars. Like, we don't slow down. That's how you
Right.
get hit. And we get there, and the civil affairs guys, the sergeant's like, can y'all not run every car off the road? Like, y'all hit 23 of them. And we're like, they go too slow, you know? And then we're like, you know, when you bring out food, it's like they're like ants that swarm your
Yep.
vehicles. And for us, we're like, this is super uncomfortable.
Yep.
And we're going to kind of a half hostile, trying to be nice, trying to be, don't kill them all, and like this give and take. And
Yeah.
then we take contact. And the civil affairs guys that was with us was not ready for our response. Cause like, we're like turn every gun and just unleashed hell, you know, and we're radioing back. And they're like, hey, don't get in a fight and stay in the fight with people that aren't a part of our unit.
Right,
And
right.
cause this is, you know, bad TTPs and stuff like that. And so
Yeah.
we had to break contact and go back. And the E4 that was the driver was like, y'all are crazy. Y'all are crazy. Y'all just get in trouble. We're like, yes, we are very good at getting in trouble. So,
Yeah.
but I'd like to hear about civil affairs. I actually looked at that a long time ago. Between that and PsyOps, you know,
Yeah.
it's like the other wing of, you know, Spec Ops type
Yeah.
stuff, you know, and
Right.
people don't really know what the mission is.
Yeah, so it's interesting because it's kind of evolved, and I could get into all the nerd stuff about the difference between the active component and the reserve component, and
Right.
you know, the mission is the mission, right? You look at an FM, the FM is what the FM is, right? And that's what tells the rest of the army what civil affairs does and what they could realistically expect. Now, how it's employed on the soft side is going to be different than how it's
Oh
employed
gosh,
on the
night and day.
conventional side,
Yeah.
right? And I think that's where a lot of confusion lies, and there's a lot of consternation between the active component and the reserve component. But I mean, generally speaking, your experience that is very on par with how we try to go about business, but it depends on the environment. So situational awareness, where you're going, what you're doing,
Yeah.
like from the get-go, if that CA element is not integrated into your TTPs, that's failure number one,
Yeah, we didn't know who they
right?
were. They were brand
And
new.
no,
We're like, who are
exactly.
you
Like you're
guys?
just out there just providing security.
Yeah.
There should have been a very good brief ahead of time about
Yeah.
what the mission was, who's got what, what's going to happen
Oh,
if
yeah.
we get into contact, like all that stuff. And if it doesn't happen, then there's failures across the board.
Oh, yeah.
And as things progressed through both fields of operation, things changed, right? Things evolved. We got better at integrating. They got better at integrating. It just.
Well, it never happened before. That's the thing.
Right,
It's like,
right.
I mean, obviously the soft side is a whole different unique, and you're working at the ODAs, and you have a relationship with those guys, you know,
Right.
predominantly, you know, and some you've probably done PT at least with them sometime, you know, and this
Right.
is, you know, the reserve side is obviously getting activated to go attach to active units, and but we'd never done it before. You know,
Yeah.
pre Iraq 03, like when we didn't have time to even get them mobilized to do Desert Storm. You know, they were kind of involved. You know, but that, we just pulled some soft guys for Kosovo and there's another country and my brain just turned off.
Bosnia.
But I was thinking, I was like, there's another one there somewhere. You know, like we just pulled soft guys over to cover down because it's too quick. You know, but this is the first time we've ever had to massively integrate, like, and activate a massive civil affairs. You know, what do they call the battalions or groups or.
Yeah,
You know, whatever.
battalion.
So, and you know, and it's like, and then try to take people, a whole bunch of people from Oklahoma and Nebraska. I don't know where they're even at, but you know, and then you're trying to bring them together at Fort Bragg for a massive training prep up, which is who knows how long. And then you spread them out all across Iraq, you know, and Iraq's pretty big, you know, and so it's a communication nightmare.
No, it absolutely is. It's a huge logistical nightmare, and it let alone the fact that you're trying to integrate all of these reserve people into your unit, but they just, most of them just came together themselves for,
Months ago.
the prep. Right. So you get a bunch of people who have never worked together anyways, and maybe have done drill once or twice, and who knows what they got done. So yeah, it's an absolute logistical nightmare to put all those pieces together and make it work. And the fact
That's
that
the
you
cool part.
guys,
It worked.
it did,
I mean,
right? The fact that you
to a
guys made
point,
it there,
you know.
it and were able to execute the mission, albeit haphazardly, right? It's not ideal, but the fact that you were able to make it happen speaks volumes to the professionalism across the board on all parts.
Yeah,
So, I mean, I can't.
there was a brief on if we take contact with, so we will shoot back. I was like, and we told them like, don't shoot. Y'all just stay in the truck, like defend yourself, but like don't, like this is our job. Like we will protect you and we will get y'all back. And so there was a brief to make that clear, but it was just kind of a, oh crap, this actually happened. You know, and it was an interesting thing because you know you never know what you're going to get involved in. I mean, working with them at the time was it mid-teens, I think, was going on at the same time, and same thing, you're kind of just throwing people together really quick, and they reactivated, you know, call people back, that were a lot of those mid-teens, and it was an interesting, and they were heavily involved with getting training from civil affairs because that's kind of what their job fell under that umbrella.
No, for sure. It evolved as both theaters of operation kind of went on, right? What we did in Afghanistan circa 2012 was absolutely different than how those teams were integrating even in 2009. And so, as the missions evolved, as the theaters of operation evolved, so too did our TTPs and what we did and how we integrated. You go from being that what we thought was going to be a soft CA element and integrating with ODAs to now we're integrating with SEAL teams, with MARSOC teams, with ODAs, right? So it was, you just had to figure out what it was that they were going to do and try to do your best to integrate as a completely different service, let alone, different styles of mission and everything else. So
Well, that was what is it, my years are going to be off on this, and someone's going to send me a message and be like, "You're an idiot." That's okay. I've been called worse, you know. But like the J of JSOC, like, existed as a command element only as a term for a long time until 6, 7, 8, you know, 09 window, where it became this like, no, we legitimately have to be joint or this won't work. You know, and it's really interesting to see the shift of all those communities, you know, and to, you know, and I mean, obviously the Army has SOAR, and so like it's like I call it the hub, because between Rangers and MARSOC and SEALs and Delta and you know, Green Berets and stuff, all those teams, like they all use one aviation unit, you know, and so like it's like the coolest hub of information, you know, and everybody's like, oh, you know that guy, oh man, Dave's the best, you know, whatever, and they all know it, so they have this common connection with their ride. And it's kind of, it's really unique to talk to any of those guys. And I got to work with one. I was at the Pentagon, one of the aviators there, and he was like the coolest dude ever. He had the best stories.
Oh yeah, for sure.
I was like, where? I said, I looked up your awards, and you got two silver stars, and they pretty much say you came to work and done good. You know, he's like, yeah. I was like, one of them just happens to be the day we killed Bin Laden. You know, he's like, oh, it's just a weird quit. I'm like, I'm not stupid. You know, it's like, yeah, it's a busy night. Like, of course it was. You jerk. Like, you're like so humble about it. Like, here you are, the guy that flew the pickup after they crashed the second helicopter. He's the guy that flew the Chinook, like, to get the rest
Oh
of the team
yeah.
out. You know, I'm like, kind of a big deal, dude.
No big deal. Like I was just a pilot, man. It's no big deal.
You talk about that like you were happy that I got wild berry Skittles in your MRE. Like, it's not a,
It's interesting, right? The different mindset between most of the 160th aviators that I've run into, right? The actual pilots and your other pilots, pick your branch, right? Usually you get the arrogance and everything else, but I don't know that I've really talked to any of those 160th pilots that are
Chill.
super arrogant. You know, they're typically very chill and just relaxed and like, hey, you know, whatever it is, what it is, and like, I'm not gonna glorify what I've done.
So the guy, and I can't remember his name, too many head injuries, the guy at the Medal of Honor, obviously, you know, he's standing there, the memes that came from him, like, damn it, y'all made me put on my full uniform for this. Now they know that I exist. They're not supposed to know that CW5s actually exist.
Right, exactly.
And I came to work in uniform and I shaved. It's like, this is too many check the blocks at one time. Get rid of my reputation. Oh, that's crazy. So I gotta ask, because you gave a timeline there though, and your career is bookended by two pretty catastrophic events between your a year or less in and 9/11 happens, and then you're going through retirement during COVID. So I gotta hear about,
Oh
you
my
have the worst
God.
bookends of a career.
Jesus Christ. Okay, so God. 9/11, that whole thing, right? So I'll start there just because it's an interesting story to begin with. So I graduated air assault school at the Sabalaski Air Assault School there in Fort Campbell on September 13th, 2001.
Okay, so you're doing rehearsals.
So,
Got it.
and there we are that morning, and it was interesting. Got up normal, went and did PT, and then they give us an hour to go change and stuff. So, I lived in the barracks. I went, got changed. I went down to the dining facility. And there was something on the TV, right? I thought it was just a movie playing. I'm just sitting there, like scarfing my breakfast down because I got about 15 minutes before I've actually got to
You're a
go down there.
candidate.
Yeah,
So.
right, exactly. And I'm like, oh, this is weird. I've never seen this movie before. I wonder what it is. Like, just nothing, no idea what's actually happening, that this is actually the
Is
news
Campbell East
news.
Coast time or is it Central? I know it's right around the
It
border.
is, oh my God.
It's half
Fort
and half, isn't
Campbell
it?
is it's yes, it's half and half. It's split in the middle. So it's half Kentucky, half Tennessee. I think we were on Central Time, if I
So you're an
remember
hour behind on
correctly.
TVs in a sense.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
That,
yeah.
because I know it's super weird. I've never been there, but
Yeah, so it's like I don't know, what, 8 o'clock in the morning, right? So it's
8:15 in the morning, the planes were hitting,
right.
so.
Yeah, so I'm right there. And that's why the time, like it is. It messes with me all the time because they're like, oh, the plane struck the first tower at this time. And I'm like, it was earlier. Like I was eating chow. How did, oh, that's right, Central Time. Yeah. So, anyways, so I rush, get back, and we're about to start right after formation. And then that's when they drop the news, the instructors drop the news of what happened. And so everything changed. We didn't do rappelling out of the helicopter because all of the aviation assets were
Grounded.
grounded except for attack helicopters. When we did the 12-mile road march, it used to be all the way out, 6 miles out and 6 miles back, but that made you had to go out one of the gates to do it.
Certainly the gates.
So instead, we had to do 3 miles out, 3 miles back, 3 miles back out, and 3 miles back, which it kind of
Break it
sucks.
up, yeah.
But what really sucks about that, if anybody's ever been to Fort Campbell, you know, when you go down Range Road and then you make the left on, I'll be damned if I remember the name, but you go down to where the ASP is or was, it's a straight downhill shot to the bottom and then a straight uphill shot right back up to the other
Yes.
side. And you had to do that sucker, you
Yeah,
know,
twice, two complete
multiple
directions.
times.
That sucks.
It absolutely sucked. So, graduation, we had two Kiowas that hovered over our graduation to protect us from I don't know why we were going to get
Yeah.
attacked, but you know, hey, if you wanted to
The
attack my
crowd got
graduates, there
squirrely.
we
It was
are,
over.
man.
That's
And
awesome.
then yeah, so fast forward to 2020, COVID 2021 time frame, and man, so interesting things happened. So we are, let's see, what was that? 2019, I had just PCS'd from Fort Knox to Fort Campbell. And I was going to retire at the end of 2020 slash 2021, right? Clean break, January 1st, right? Decided not to take promotion, declined promotion to retire. Just because the benefit wasn't worth the costs in the long run. Because I was looking at coming from HRC, I knew the people who do the promotion stuff. So I had the conversation. I was on the list. I was the last one on the old slash new promotions that they did where you had an OML, but it was only a selection list. It wasn't the entire OML.
Oh yeah, I was on the team that made that,
Yeah, you guys
I
are awesome. No,
know.
I'm just
I
kidding.
just made the
No, no. So I mean, it was okay. But I am trying to decide how am I going to balance my career, right? So what does my promotion look like? What does my promotion window look like? And then what does the longevity look like? So by the time I would have been promoted,
Was it T7 or 8?
eight.
8, yeah, okay. I
Yeah.
figured. I figured. I was just.
By the time I would have been promoted, it would have been 2021 to 2022. I was looking at being close to end of the exhausting of the list, even though I was in the middle. But we also had that whole E8 fiasco where there were too many E8s in the Army,
Oh, yeah.
and it wasn't, were we going to bust? It was, how bad are we going to bust, and what's Congress going to do about it, type of thing. So anybody who was not in a priority MOS was basically just getting pushed all the way towards the end, and then they were just going to exhaust the list and call it a day. And that's about when it would have happened if I had taken the promotion. So all that said, I was like, okay, it just doesn't make sense for me anymore. Let me go ahead and just drop my retirement. So I did. It's like January 2020 when I dropped my retirement.
Oh, that was about to be close.
And so COVID isn't really a thing. It is, but it's not really. And then my mom dies
Oh,
at the
man.
end of January, like 2 weeks after I dropped my retirement. Just, she was, I don't know. She was born in 65. So, you know, like 55 years old, right? Not even 54. Heart attack.
Sorry to hear that, man. That sucks.
It's been like 6 years, so you know,
Still sucks.
yeah, no, for sure, it does. So then we run into the COVID thing starts to pick up more and more, and by May time frame, we're in full lockdown mode. Everything is kind of like shut down. Everybody's like remote working, or we're kind of hodgepodge a little bit in the office, but mostly remote. And I'm looking at the job outlook for human resources. And I'm like, this is not looking good. So I was like, all right, you know what? Let me just go ahead and extend my retirement. So I submit my paperwork. And when you do the extension, right, if you have to be within a year of your proposed new retirement date. So I'm like, okay, I'm gonna have it for July. So let me wait till August. So I submit the paperwork in August. October 6th rolls around, and that's the day I'm supposed to start terminal leave. That's the day I get the email from HRC saying, your request has been denied.
Oh.
So here I am, supposed to be on terminal leave. I'm going, what am I supposed to do? Like, what does
Wow.
this mean? Like, it's just a whirlwind of like what's happening. At the end of September, I was referred to the med board.
Oh, God.
So I have this med board thing going on potentially. I have but not accepted, right? Referred but not accepted yet. I have this retirement thing going on, but I don't know what's happening. All right, so what do we do? So I contact the guy because thank God he's a retired sergeant major that I worked with at HRC. So I just emailed him directly. I was like, hey, so what's happening? Why did this thing get denied? I thought COVID and the job market, and I provided the proof of the downturn in the job market. I thought that would be enough to, warrant getting an extension. He's like, we're not granting anyone extensions. The Army's trying to keep people in. So just submit a revocation of your retirement. Okay, cool. So I submit my revocation. It's, I don't know, probably the beginning of November timeframe. Around the same time, I get accepted to the med board. I'm trying to talk with my Pueblo. I'm trying to talk with multiple entities to figure out like what takes priority? What do I need to do? I have this revocation in. Does that supersede this? Do I need to pull that back because the med board is supposed to supersede retirement? Like, what is going on? I get like no answers. No, nobody's responding. Nobody knows the right answer to this whole, I don't know, math problem, if you want to call it that, right? It's trigonometry at this point. So my revocation packet gets lost in staffing at SWCC. Special Warfare Center and School, for those who don't know, that's the center of excellence that trains all of the soft people. Long story short. So it's December, middle December, pushing towards like leave and when everything's going to be shut down. Still haven't heard anything about my revocation, still nothing on the med board superseding anything. And I start kind of panicking a little bit, and I start sending emails and talking with folks, and like, all right, we'll just wait and whatever. So I discovered the hard way that if nothing is done in the system when it's time for you to retire, you're going to be retired
You're
anyways.
done. Yeah, you're out.
So January 1st, I didn't get a paycheck. Nor was I going to get a paycheck, and I wasn't in the system to do
Wow.
anything.
Oh, no.
So, like, I'm kind of shitting bricks at this point. What am I supposed to do about all this stuff? Thankfully, I had a great sergeant major that was able to take care of a lot of it on the front side. They got me put back in the system. It took some time for my pay to get restarted and everything else. But that didn't negate the fact that all this stuff had happened. Now, go through the whole med board process. I am for sure 100% P&T from the VA, right? Everything is going as planned. Everybody's telling me you're going to be good to go, blah, blah, blah. I get my results back from the PEB. They found me fit by presumption. So my revocation did not hit before my med board was approved. So when they find you fit by presumption, basically presuming you are going to retire anyways, there's no reason to medically retire you. Great. So now I have to resubmit all of my VA stuff all over again because all of that is null and void because I'm not getting medically retired. I've basically been retained.
Right.
Okay, cool. So meanwhile, in May of that time frame, I got my results in July of 2021. Is that right? Yes, 2021. So I got my results in July. In May, I had interviewed for working at the Proponent, and I got selected to be a GS11 to work at the Proponent, pending getting
You're
out.
now,
So I was
right.
like, okay, I have this job offer. Well, let me sell a bunch of my leave and let me just get out in October. Haste makes waste. I was within the 90-day window. Great, everything gets approved, except I don't get benefits on discharge.
You're 6 months after that.
So now all my stuff gets lumped in after the fact, and I don't get my full paycheck from the VA the first time I'm supposed to, because now afterwards they have to send it to the Army to make sure that they don't, cross
Service method.
paths, right, and make sure that they're not overpaying me. So I don't get, thankfully I sold some leave, because I don't get paid my full retirement and VA disability until the end of December. And I don't get my first full paycheck from the GS side until like the middle of December, because you got to go with two full pay periods. So I didn't actually get hired on and start until like November 8th, right? So yeah, so we're talking about the
That's a
middle of
mess.
December, because you go through two pay periods, and then afterwards it takes another week or whatever to finally get paid. Yeah, so that is my COVID retirement
I was
story
gonna say, during
for
all of that paperwork nightmare, COVID's going on, not helping, I'm sure. Because
yeah.
like you try to call somebody, and they're like, I'm teleworking, it's trying to email somebody, I'm not in the office, or it's just like everything got slowed down, and it's a, I like to hear what people that are, it's a, terrible story and experience for you, but there's people that are in conventional units or whatever. Or even unconventional, doesn't matter. But like, experience in the armies. I was in the Pentagon during all that, and so I remember March 13th of 2020. They're like, I was like, why am I? There's nobody here. Like this is the. I mean, it was the weirdest thing.
What's doing here?
I'm a captain, and the four or five lieutenant colonels that are above me, and the five colonels and the general that I'm work. No one. They're all not. Why am I at work? And so I remember going to a random colonel on my team and being like, I'm gonna go home. This is weird. I'm gonna see if I can find some toilet paper, and on the way home. And so I just went home, and like literally that's the last day I put a uniform on. And I teleworked for the next 3 years. Long story there, but it was crazy because like I'm on a team that doesn't need to be in the office. And I'll tell you the creepiest thing though, if you want to hear like a ghost story of the army, have you ever been in the Pentagon before? So like there's people everywhere. I mean, it's 25,000 people that work there. People don't realize that. And so we had a, I don't know, it was, I think it was like August, of 2020. The 2-star I worked for was moving to be Fort Campbell to be 101st commander. And so we had these little this farewell for him. But we had to do it 4 times because we could only bring some people into the conference room.
Oh, my Lord.
And so we had to do this like repeat farewell speech,
Oh, my
So
God,
it
that's
was
crazy.
so we could show up and then we did 20 minutes, and then we had a 10-minute break, and then 20 minutes, 10-minute break for him, and then we had small groups around this room. Well, I remember I got there, I was in the five, get there at 5:20 was my assigned time. And we're in civilian clothes, which is great. And so I go to the Pentagon, go on the, I think it's the south entrance. And I go in the hallway, and it was pitch black. Like the outer ring, they're all motion lights. And I'm like, no one's been in here for at least 10 minutes for the lights to freaking turn off. Like it was creepy because there's, the outer windows are no light comes in, all the doors are shut. So it's just literally just a dead hallway. It was like, Yep, this is how they make video games right here. They just
Yeah.
walk with the camera and some rabid dog's about to come around the corner. You know, it was creepy, but as you walk, they all turned
Yeah.
on. I was like, okay, that was, I
This
can't,
is
I'll never get that experience ever again in my
nope,
life.
right?
So, and that was the last time, that's the last time I went to work was for that. And
Damn.
I was at home the rest of the time, and I retired in July of 23 and never went back to work. I did a, the only time I put my uniform on was promotion to major. And they came to my house to do that, which is kind of cool. And then we had to do a, what's the ID card and dog tag check.
Yeah.
And so,
PAI.
yeah, PS, so, you know, so I was in basketball shorts and flip flops and I had my top. I was
Like
like, I'm here. Okay, I'm good. Shh, took it off.
it.
They're just like, are you in uniform? I'm like, no, I'm in Texas. So,
Yeah.
but it's crazy time. That's crazy. I've had a lot of guests on the show that are, and it's interesting to hear everyone's 9/11 stuff because
Yeah.
it's like, it's bonkers. I mean, I had a guy that was on in basic training, you know, and like basic training is just a unique beast in and of itself.
Right.
You know, the rumor mill in basic training, I mean, is bonkers.
Yeah.
On a normal day, and everything pre-9/11, no one's thinking we're going to war, you know. And you're there, and he was telling this hilarious story about just like you don't you think it's a joke, you think it's a drill sergeant just being like, this is gonna be awesome, they're gonna, you know.
Yeah.
There's no cell phones and all that, and everyone's freaking out. And but then someone finally gets to call their parents, and they're like, no, it really did happen,
Yeah.
you know.
Yeah,
So.
it's absolutely wild, and it's crazy because that's one of those distinct moments when I was in basic training because it was pre-9/11. They had us in one of those classrooms on Fort Leonard Wood, and the whole company is in there, right? And we're monotonous, like blah, blah, blah. Like I
Yeah.
have no idea what the class was about, but all of a sudden all the drill sergeants kind of came in, and then they all stood by the doors, and all the doors were closed. They were open because it was hot in there. I'm like, okay, this is weird, but okay. And the instructor's still talking and talking, and then all of a sudden the company commander comes up and interrupts, and they tell us that North Korea just invaded South Korea. We're going to accelerate you through basic training. You're going to graduate by week six
That's
after
awesome.
BRM, and you're going to get shipped off to your unit to go to Korea.
Oh, that's awesome. People are freaking out.
Oh my God. And so me and this skinny Hispanic dude Ortiz were sitting next to each other, like, all right, I mean, I guess this is what we signed up for. This sucks, but all right, it is what it is. This one girl stands up and goes, I wish I was making this up because it just sounds so damn fake. Because it really was. But she stands up, she's like, I signed up for the college money. Ah! And she passes out on the floor.
That's great.
Yeah.
Oh man, that's
Some people tried to make it way for the door, right? So that's why all the drill sergeants were standing there. They let it go on for a few minutes, and then
We're
they
just
told
kidding.
us what was really
Yeah.
going on. We wanted to see what your motivations were for joining the army, and you
Yeah.
guys showed us your true colors,
Right. Oh yeah.
type of thing. So yeah, it's crazy to think that that would be something that was just actually happening at the
Right.
time,
And you know, I always joke, I was an NCO for 9 years before I crossed over. And
Yeah.
the worst thing in the army is a board E5 or E6. Like it really is. It's like,
Oh, yes.
I'm going to entertain myself. Here we go. I have a crazy idea. We found some water balloons and it's on, you know, or so whatever it is. It's like you walk in flash flood, you know, and see if everybody can get to climb the lockers and stuff. And you're like, who
Right.
makes up these games?
Yeah.
Board NCOs, that's where it comes
Yep.
from.
Yep, exactly. And definitely not E7s. It's definitely E5s and E6s that make up those.
The mafia is like the half shield
Yeah.
of like what we can fix it or break it. Just let us know
Yep.
which way you want us to go.
Yeah.
You
No,
know.
exactly. That's 100% true.
I
Man.
miss being an E4. That was a fun rank because you could just get away with so much crap, you
Yeah.
know, and then like I'll always joke. I miss though of all the ranks and responsibilities and stuff. I truly miss being an E6. There's a responsibility side of it as like a squad leader, which is cool, but like it's the last, and I think most MOSs, it falls under this, even across the branches, it's the last spot where you get direct contact with training. And then
It
everything
is.
else, you make E7, it's cool and all, you're at the training, but you're not kicking in the door. You're in the catwalk, and or whatever. And so like it's the last rank where you can really be there with the guys or gals or whatever it is, and it's, and I really, because I remember being the captain, being a company commander, I'm like, I don't want to go to the range, girl. I want so badly wanted to go, but like my first round's like, sir, stop, no, you can't do that, no, I know they have to do it themselves, but I can do it better. They used to do that job, so
No, for sure.
that was the biggest piece of humble pie is to not do something.
No, for sure. And I think my career got extended, my E6 time, we'll call it that, got extended just by going to civil affairs because a 4-person team, right? And so it's appealing. Anything in soft really is appealing when you transition over, because even for officers, you get to extend your time, right? You don't have company command time until you're a major. You get to be on a team as a captain, right? You're part of a
Forever.
4-person team or an 8 or a 12-person team, and you just, you definitely get to extend your career doing that. But no, I mean, it was fun. It was a good time.
It's that community, just anywhere in the soft community, is what's cool about it is you're around motivated people.
For the most part,
I mean, there's always some people that squeak through and you're like, how the crap did you get here? I mean, that's anywhere, but for the most part is everyone is, smart, in shape, and motivated to do the job. And I always joke on pretty much every episode of this thing is, my favorite thing about the airborne community is that everyone you work with is just as stupid as you are. Because the plane can land, but we're like, nah, I gotta pee real bad. Open the door, let's go. And you want to be around people that are motivated, I've told somebody before about when you train doing pretty stupid stuff, that can get you killed. When training can get you killed, then you go into whatever combat environment it is. It's like we've already put ourselves in a very high stress situation, environment, whatever it is. So like whenever chaos really does happen, you're like, this is Tuesday, we're good, and you're kind of bored, you're not bored by it, but it's you don't freak out, and because people will freak the heck out.
But boy, what happens when you take that uniform off and you don't get any of
Oh,
that anymore?
it's there's a who's the Navy SEAL? He got a beard that's like twice as long as mine. But he talks, he has a great, I don't want to steal it because it's so good. He's like, I don't have PTSD, I have LTSD. And he's like, I don't have post-traumatic stress, I have lack of traumatic stress. And I'm like, that's the greatest example I think I've ever heard, is like when you live in an environment that is constantly just chaotic stress, and then it just turns off. And you're like, how do I create stress? Because I want it. It is the drug, and I think it's where a lot of guys get in trouble, is they get out and they get the Ducati. It's like, you've never been on a bike before. It's a Ducati 1000. Okay, I'll call Bob's funeral home because it's gonna you're next. You can sense it, and they want to. What's the old, I think it's the old Toyota commercial where it has the they're driving like all the off-road racing stuff, and it has the IVs that's sucking out adrenaline because it's like producing adrenaline so fast. It's kind of like that where like you're seeking it and trying to recreate it, and they can't calm down. And so the smallest instance of a spousal argument or kids being late or not doing the dishes or whatever turns into something horrible. And then the more that goes on, the told you the very beginning is, people make terrible decisions in their life, And it sucks. And that's why I have this show, is to laugh about it and, at least remember those days, remember those stories, because, I, as a paratrooper, and I'm still a fairy, y'all are airborne people as well. You're bonkers like the rest of us, but it's, there's a certain thing that happens. This is my non-doctoral thesis opinion, but we find things funny. Like, I mean, it's not just dark humor, which is its own thing, but like the closer we get to almost accidentally dying, like the better the story it is. And if you tell that to your family members or your coworkers now, or whatever, they may not, they're gonna be like, almost died and you're laughing about that. You should talk to somebody. You're like, I'm talking to you, I'm telling you the story. That is the medicine, And like, yeah, when I'm, telling a story about somebody being a toe jumper, it's a freaking hilarious story because you see them like, ah! And everyone on the ground saying the same thing, like, we gotta figure out who that guy is.
That guy's legendary.
That's what he's like. I've always wanted to see Air Force get real big, real small, real big, real small. That's kind of my theory, is that people, unbeknownst to them, civilians have been taught for a whole generation now of like two things, right? What are the two things that got this entire war, which is tell a veteran thank you for the service, right? Which drives us all crazy after 25 years. And the other thing is don't ask them about what they've done, you might trigger their PTSD. And so you've literally got an entire 25 years of people that have been told don't talk to veterans. Don't ask them. But in reality, a very vast majority of us are just like, please, I would love to tell you what I've done. I've done some pretty crazy stuff. And then, on the back end of that, though, it can be a little bit of issue of like service shaming, which is it's gonna happen no matter what. Cause like when the reality hits, it's like, well, yeah, I was deployed, I was whatever thing. Let's say a cook is a great example, because all the defects overseas were like Turkish people, pretty much. And so like there's like one or two NCOs that are kind of like supervising them, but the actual cooks are like all the defect guards, and it's not their fault. They didn't pick that job. They picked the cook. And the fact that we contracted out is not their fault, but they get done and they're like, I guarded the defect the whole time. And then I don't want to tell these stories. That's not sexy, because it doesn't make good podcasts where people are multi-tabs and secret squirrels, whatever. It's like, you did your job. And I tell people, like, you signed up to do a job and you went and you did the job you were told to do. Like, embrace
And you
it.
survived.
You survived. I was like, good God, rockets came in all the freaking time, especially at BIOP, And I mean, the defect has got so many holes. It's not even funny, And when you're in there, I was like, you took the risk that still a very vast majority of the population isn't even qualified to try to take it. And then those that do don't. And so you still did it. And like, I had a guy a long time ago on the show that joined after Desert Storm and got out before 9/11. And he literally said he struggled with suicide thoughts for a long time. He's like, am I even a veteran? I missed everything, so it's kind of a, sorry, I'm rambling now, but it's a problem.
No,
So.
you're absolutely right. It is. And that, I mean, it weighs on us, emotionally, mentally, physically. It just that stuff drives me nuts. Like, okay, well, why do we need to compare when we all went? Sure. Multi-tab person probably did something more, I don't know, army
Sexy, right?
than
Like
you know what I
talking,
mean,
yeah.
right? But that doesn't mean that that job was any more significant than any other job. It just they went and did their job and they survived. The other person went and did their job and survived. If we didn't have all the other stuff, this stuff over here, it doesn't work. So, yeah, it takes everybody to make the army go. every other branch of service.
Yeah.
That's why those MOSs exist to begin
Yeah.
with.
It's a, I think ranking is, we're guys, it's naturally what we do. We
Yeah.
rank everything, and I think it's a struggle to not compare. And you're like, oh man, there wasn't ID that one time. And it's like, who cares? Like, be thankful you weren't. Trust me, I've been close contact. It sucks. It's not, like I was
It's
in
not fun.
19, 19 IEDs. I'm like, that's, I don't want to brag about that. I don't really care.
Oh.
Like, you need to drive faster, Bob.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's, it's not a, that, or you should probably be a pope, start preaching that. So
Right.
it's a mess. But man, well, thanks a bunch for taking the time to be on the show. It's I really enjoy getting to talk to any vet, of especially unique things. Civil affairs is, I had no idea. That was kind of your background, and it's interesting to hear just different stories. And like we just said, like everybody has their story, and yeah, I think your career is crazy. I think the bookend of it is like you could not have gone to Hollywood and said, all right, start my
Nope.
career, then the worst terrorist attack in the history, yeah, start, put that, do that one, and then let's go along, and I'm gonna do some other cool stuff, and then let's end it with this crazy global pandemic.
Yes.
Like a movie, a freaking author could not have figured that one out. So that's
Really.
crazy. So, but any closing comments on, encouragement to people or just yourself or.
I think it's just, we touched on it a little bit, is the mental health aspect.
Yeah.
So just making sure that we open up and talk, and it doesn't matter who it is, who it's to, getting that story out there to anybody, everybody who's gonna listen is helpful. It may not seem like it at the time, more I've talked about it, the more comfortable I've become with some of the things that. So, holding in definitely is not the way.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's the more we say it, the more comfortable it is, and then hopefully make an impact, doing it that way. So, well, if you haven't, by all means, if you haven't subscribed, please do. I'm on pretty much every platform there is, and if, otherwise, I'll see you on the next episode, and I'll talk to you soon.